Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 49 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and I want to say good morning to Eomar, Texas Toast AC, Jacob for doing everything in the background, Bob Van Kirk, Wade, Hunter, Other Jordan, Doc, Bitcoin Carney, everybody else listening in the audience. Good morning, y'all. I really appreciate you tuning in. I'm going to have a fun discussion today. If you haven't heard, there were some big Bitcoin news that developed over the afternoon, evening, yesterday. So we'll be diving into that. But before we jump in, I want to make sure everybody understands the reason that we're doing this show every weekday, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. And that's to make sure we spread the message of Bitcoin. What is that message? Well, it's pretty simple. We want to show everybody what freedom technology can do. We want to show them the power of a decentralized network that and the power and the impact it can have on local communities. And we can point people directly to Operation Gabriel and our efforts with boots on the ground in North Carolina. If y'all haven't heard, we started Operation Gabriel about 2 weeks ago. With your generosity and support, we're able to raise over $115,000. And those funds are going directly to help people directly impacted by Hurricane Helene. So we have a lot of our crew that are going up there to help. We've met and made a lot of connections with other organizations. We've teamed up with the Tennessee National Guard. And so we're making a big impact. And the biggest thing is that everybody that we go out and help, we're spreading that Bitcoin message, and we're spreading the message of freedom tech and decentralization. So it's really, really phenomenal. I'm very impressed by what we're able to do out there. So if you haven't heard or checked it out, there's a link up in the nest. Go out there and click on it, and you can find out more. But we'll continue updating everybody in regards to what's going on with Hurricane Helene, because unfortunately, this isn't going to be a short-term fix. It's going to take a long time to get everybody back to how things were before the storm. And I know that was a really long rant, but I have Shane up here, and Shane actually just got back a couple days ago from North Carolina. So Shane, if you want to give us a quick little update on Operation Gabriel, I'd love to hear it.
Hey, morning, everybody. Good to be with you guys again. I'm down here at TabConf in Atlanta right now. Our big brain, Gary, invited me down here, got us a speaking spot to come in and talk about what we've been doing up in North Carolina. And big shout out. We got Micah out in the audience right now and her commander and the Christian Rangers, one of the guys we've been working instrumentally with up there. I can't say enough about that group. Also a Bitcoiner, and you know, just one of the best guys you know you'd ever hope to run across, especially in a disaster situation like that. He's got one heck of an organization that has already set up shop when I got up there, and kind of just got in to the fold with these guys, and you know, seeing what they were doing, I was like, this is a great symbiotic relationship, and very aligned while bringing different things to the table. So in terms of what's going on right now, we've got some Bitcoin veterans moving in and out of the area. What they're most likely doing right now is just dropping off supplies. One of the big things is still this Operation Heat Wave and getting heaters and generators and things like that into the area. One of the other big operations is taking care of the livestock, which many of these people that are, you know, very self-sufficient and independent are working on. Other aspects of this are some medical. There's obviously the second and third order effects of what's going on up there right now. There's going to be a ton of sickness going around, a lot of it stemming from particulates in the air, from all the dust, the mold, the black mold that's setting in some of these spaces. And so things like nebulizers and just really, you know, medical help in that area is much appreciated. This is going to be a long fight. And I just, you know, I can't stress that part of it enough. We need people to continuously, you know, just cycle in and cycle out. This is going to be a marathon, and keeping your work life and your family life balance in order during this is a huge thing. But we've been talking a lot about where we are going to steer things and having the impact, you know, this really potent impact that we've had to be able to get on the ground and see exactly where The funding that we've raised could be put to use and vetted, you know, so that we have proof of work, I think, is mostly done for now. And obviously, we can turn funding back on later and start going again and if we see the need to do so. But one of the places we're looking at right now is PCCR. What they've done is they've launched Operation Heatwave, and this was weeks ago. Got to know these guys over there, Big Tim McKinney. And Nate over in Spruce Pine. This area was one of the worst hits out there between them, Burnsville, Avery. It's all over in Western North Carolina. And what they need more than anything right now is the ability to generate heat, generate electricity. They are going out of their way to vet people, and they are starting to automate this process where they're doing delivery. So I think where we're going to be headed, and we'll obviously have to take a vote on this, but this is the way that we think we can be most impactful, because if we can't get people through to the spring, then obviously we've lost a little bit of the mission. So the mission is keep as many people alive until spring as possible. And that's, you know, because they're not going to be restoring power for 3, 4, 5 months in some cases up there. So heat is being the big thing. And, you know, I can't think of anything else better than, you know, giving this group of people a fighting chance in terms of power and heat during a long winter up there at altitude, which gets pretty frosty.
Yeah, thank you for that, Shane. So if people still want to come out and help, what is the best way that, or where should we direct them?
Yeah, so I would say we can give you guys a contact specifically over at PCCR. That way that we can get those distributions sent to those guys, and they can get them out to where they've already vetted the people that need them. Also, I'll get that to you, and you guys can put it up into the nest there where they can start doing this in a more automated fashion.
Oh, perfect. Again, thank you for that update. And all this information is on our Bitcoin handle, so feel free to go check it out. Again, if this is the first time you're hearing about it, or if you've just been kind of sitting on the sidelines and want to take the next step, please reach out to us. So I want to go ahead and start diving into today's main topic I think we're going to be talking about. And it's not going to be Dennis Porter's breaking election news that's going to swing the whole election to one side. I think that was kind of a flop. But we're going to go dive in right now to Microsoft. In case you all haven't heard, Microsoft is going to have a shareholder vote proposing to add Bitcoin to its balance sheet. This vote is going to take place on December 10th of this year. Some of the notable things I want to directly take from their press release statement. The board itself is recommending against adding Bitcoin to its balance sheet. So I don't know how they'd be able to push this to a vote if the board members themselves are against it. So I would imagine there's been a lot of outside pressure being added to it. But this is some of the things I noticed from their press statement. I'm going to quote them. The average rate of inflation over the last 4 years, according to CPI, which is a remarkably poor and corrupt measure of inflation, is 5.03%. There are inflationary times corporations should and have a fiduciary duty to consider diversifying their balance sheets with assets that appreciate more than bonds, even if those assets are more volatile in the short term. From June 23 to June 24, Bitcoin has increased by almost 100%, outperforming bonds by 94%. Over 5 years, Bitcoin has increased 414% and outperforming bonds 411%. MicroStrategy, which is like Microsoft, is a tech company, but unlike Microsoft, holds Bitcoin on its balance sheet. It's had its stock outperform Microsoft this year alone by 313%, despite only doing a fraction of the business that Microsoft has. So, I think this is really, really big news. I have a feeling in my gut that there's been a lot of outside pressure trying to get Microsoft to take this to a vote. And this vote will take place on December 10th. I have a really strong feeling that this is going to get passed. Part of the reasoning for that is BlackRock is the second largest holder of Microsoft shares. They have about $553 million. And State Street comes in third, holding about $300 million. Vanguard holds, they're first, and they hold 675 million shares. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, they had a new change in leadership. So I think their stance on Bitcoin is changing. But as about June of 24, there are 7.4 billion shares outstanding. So 70% of institutional companies hold shares of Microsoft. So I want to pass it around to everybody up here. I see Brady out in the audience. I see Greg Foss in the audience. If you guys, gentlemen, if you'd like to jump up here on the panel, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. So Jacob, if you could just send them an invite. But anybody up here currently, let's hear your take on this. I think this is really big news.
Hey guys, good morning. I was just looking at that Microsoft ballot, and it looks to me as though they are voting on an assessment of investing in Bitcoin. And I guess that's different than how I understood it yesterday. I thought they were voting whether or not to invest in Bitcoin. They're voting on whether or not to do an assessment of investing in Bitcoin. Is that correct? Is that how you guys understand it?
That's not how I understood it, but I could be completely wrong on that take.
Well, I'm getting this hot take from the Reliable Swan post. Hey, Brady. Brady's probably out walking somewhere. It looks like it just came from Microsoft. So, I mean, this looks to be like their ballot.
Yeah, I posted the ballot in the Nest, and I think that's right, Lisa. It does look like just an assessment. And Coleman, you know, great read on the proposal for number five. I also highlighted some of the things that jumped out at me, and that was the fiduciary duty mentioned twice, their responsibility to shareholders to maximize profits. So I think that's huge for folks to really consider, especially when they do the comparison of, you know, MicroStrategy's performance, stock performance versus Microsoft's over the past year.
So AC, I need you to break this down for us crayon eaters over here. So then what is the difference from them just going to be talking about it to see if they want to add it versus just having a vote to add it?
That's my read, is they're going to vote whether to do an assessment, investing the time and energy to see if it's worthwhile. And I think that once they do the assessment, it's going to be pretty clear, especially with how long it takes, you know, these large corporations to make minor muscle movements as far as investing money. You know, this is going to take us further into 2025. And by then, you know, where we're going to be, especially with MicroStrategy, if we start to talk about, you know, QQQ inclusion, S&P 500, FASB fair value accounting, those numbers are going to be dramatically higher than they are as it stands today.
So what is the timeline that we're looking at? Like after this goes to a vote?
That I couldn't tell you. I'd be pure speculation on my part.
I think what's interesting, you mentioned like the fiduciary duty. So like if they do vote in favor of doing the assessment, and if the assessment is favorable, then they're kind of like obligated, I guess, right, to take it on as an asset or as an investment. And I think we're going to mention like the nuclear stuff later, but I really think that synchronization of energy use between the fluctuating AI or data center demand and like Bitcoin mining and stuff, I think those kind of, I don't know if it's on the, if they notice it yet, but I think the synchronization of those things will be pretty clear as time goes on.
Yes. And that was,
yeah, you're,
go ahead.
Yeah. Ilmar, you're spot on here. And the stars are really aligning, and we can talk about the game theory too. So when we look at like them spinning up Three Mile Island and going to nuclear energy for their AI business, really that's a great partnership for Bitcoin mining if they start to consider to evaluate that perspective. And then, you know, other parts of the game theory is I feel like this is a notice to the other Mag 7 companies of, hey, we're evaluating this. And if they're not considering it, you can probably assume that they are also going to start considering further evaluating what a Bitcoin strategy looks like for them.
So do you think there was a lot of outside pressure to get this taken to a vote to do research on it? Or do you think this just came organically from within?
Yeah, you know, there was some other posts, and I forget who put it up last night. But you can't get a proposal like this overnight, right? This is something that takes a lot of time to get up to the board. So I think there's quite a bit of pressure. And I found it also amusing that Saylor had kind of made a post this morning to say, call me if you want to talk about it, to take you to the next trillion. So I think there's a ton of pressure from employees within Microsoft. There's probably a lot of peer group Microsoft that are also additional pressure. And, you know, if we want to look at, and I thought I saw Lauren B. Hoddle in the audience earlier, but if you want to look at like all of the other shareholders or considerations that are pushing this, I think that there's a lot of pressure, like you mentioned, from the major stakeholders. I threw up in the nest also kind of, you know, the top 10, and that was Lauren's post last night, the top 10 shareholders. And lo and behold, you know, some of them hold an ETF, have an ETF, have some exposure through different vehicles to Bitcoin. So from that perspective, I think there are a lot of big shareholders that are also applying pressure.
Brady, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for asking me to come up. Lisa nailed it. I am out walking with my dog. I'm going to sit down and just take a moment. I just wanted to confirm that, yes, this is a non-binding advisory vote. So obviously, I mean, as you guys know, the board decides this eventually. Obviously, where to allocate like assets into its treasury. But this has done a lot for like social or environmental issues, just to gauge the opinions, collective opinion of the shareholders. So like AC was saying, like a great thing about this is it's probably like the board's already expressed its opinion that they don't want to add Bitcoin to the treasury. That's probably going to be the result of this. But that might change sometime in the next year because of this vote, because of this pressure that's being put on. And we all know that it's safe to assume that there's lots of Bitcoiners in Microsoft. In fact, Jeremy Showalter, who's our chief business officer, came over from 15 years at Microsoft. Massive Bitcoiner, and he knows that there's a lot of other Bitcoiners there. So this is really good. It's pressure on Microsoft. It's pressure on the Mag 7, as was already said as well. And it's just another expression of how popular and how much demand there is for Bitcoin. The ETFs were a great example of that. And I think this vote will be another example toward the end of the year to kind of bookend ETFs with a Mag 7 shareholder vote indicating that there is massive demand for Bitcoin. So anyway, that's my take. I'm going to go back to listening mode. Thanks for having me up, guys.
Thank you for taking time to come up here, Brady. I really appreciate it. I think we're all kind of on the same page that this is going to have rippling effects across every sector. And it's at the very least, it's going to have these other large companies talking about it and just planting that seed. And it's always fun to go down and just kind of and fantasize that, like, at what point are these companies going to be screaming at their advisors for not jumping on this when they start seeing MicroStrategy just go up in extreme multiples? Bob, I see you have your hand up, so let's go ahead and. Let's hear what you have to say, sir.
Hey, good morning, Coleman. Good morning, everybody. Good to be back. I was in El Salvador for a while and then actually ended up at the beginning of this week. I was in Nashville at the Association of Financial Professionals annual conference. And so it's just for everybody's benefit. It's like 7,000 people from all the corporate treasury departments from all over the US and even some international companies. And I can tell you that none of the sessions had anything to do with Bitcoin. Lots of complex topics, but I was a little surprised that there were no topics related to MicroStrategy, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, anything. And I guess what I want to say is, as I talk to people, whether it was bankers or people in, you know, corporate treasury departments, some CFOs, and kind of ask questions, try to get a sense for what these people are thinking or if they've even considered Bitcoin, by and large, I mean, there was maybe one person who was even open-minded. It still seems like, you know, we're still so early. And so I wanted to make that point. I'm not saying it's not big news about Microsoft, but man, we're in the early innings. And I think this is going to take quite some time to play out. I also think that, you know, just the market performance of MicroStrategy will cause other corporates to look at this as a strategy. But I do think that it's going to take a lot longer than maybe some people are thinking based on this news.
So, Bob, if I could, what do you think is the catalyst or the aha moment where it changes the sentiment and people are forced to talk about it?
Well, if you look at the network effect of Bitcoin as it's progressed from, you know, the beginning, just a few people talking on Bitcoin Talk, and then just kind of the exponential growth of adoption, just people. And I think that same thing is going to happen with corporations. The difference is that there's so much education to still happen. Governance will need to be decided upon for each organization, depending on, you know, a lot of different factors. And not everybody's going to come to it at the same time, you know, at the same time, just like you and I, Coleman, came to Bitcoin, I'm sure, at different times. And so I think what'll happen is, you know, obviously MicroStrategy is kind of a first mover and a leader, and you will see others follow. You know, we've seen Semler Scientific, we've seen other companies. There's 52 public companies, according to River. I think we'll see more being reported at the end of this quarter, but it'd be just a all of a sudden this big movement. I think it's just going to happen slowly over time, where dominoes will fall, just like, you know, I don't know if you have any experience with this, but, you know, just in my journey with Bitcoin, in talking to people, everybody comes to it at a different time. I'm just glad, you know, my dad told me a couple days ago that he doubled his DCA amount. And I was like, wow, finally, like how many times do I have to bang the drum? So I just think, you know, as we look at it, people are going to move at a different pace. I think the good news is that this is a big name, and even just to have them looking at it and analyzing it is a big deal.
Thank you for that. And yeah, it's really easy to go down and get all gung-ho and want to speed this process. But I think it's good when we hear takes like that where people still aren't talking about it. So it kind of makes sure that we pump the brakes a little bit and we don't get too ahead over our skis. Understand that we're still probably one or two cycles out before it becomes extremely mainstream. So I really appreciate that, Bob. Does anybody else have anything else they want to hit on with the Microsoft announcement? Okay, so we'll go ahead and move on to the next thing. I definitely want to hit on it, and I'm going to give Dennis Porter a little bit of crap. Breaking news, going to swing the election. I think it was kind of a nothing burger. The Pennsylvania House of Representatives passed a Bitcoin rights bill. Not that it's a nothing burger entirely, but he was saying it was going to sway the election, and I don't see that whatsoever. This still has to get approved by the state Senate. But if you haven't heard, Pennsylvania passed in their House to protect the rights of self-custody of Bitcoin and allow the use of Bitcoin as a payment method. It passed with extreme bipartisan support of 176 yeses to 26 against. This move still has to go to the state Senate to get final approval, and they haven't set a date yet for this vote. But it does deserve us taking a couple minutes to talk about it, because more states are kind of coming to realization that this is important, and there are as citizens that take a stance on this and that they do view it as something that needs to be talked upon. So if anybody wants to go ahead and chime in, and again, I'm going to give Dennis Porter a little bit of crap, but I don't want him to take it the wrong way if this ever makes it to him. I think he does phenomenal work with the Satoshi Act Fund. He's helped get passed a lot of legislation and bring this up to a lot of important people in the state and Congress. So, but I just like to give him crap because everything he says is breaking news. But if anybody wants to chime in on this, please, I'd love to hear thoughts.
Yeah, but we'd listen, right? It got everybody talking about it. I mean, poor guy had to take some whips for it, but I mean, got everybody's attention, and maybe it wasn't big news to folks before Dennis called our attention to it. And it is big news, and good for Dennis. I think he is doing the Lord's work out there. It is hard to be in an airplane all of the time, you know, happy and talking about Bitcoin. So good for him. I mean, he could be living his nice life with his beautiful wife or girlfriend and not doing this for Bitcoin. God bless Dennis Porter and everybody else that does this all the time.
Yes, I just want to make sure it's abundantly clear that I do support Dennis, and I think he's doing a great job. I just think it was a little over the top to say that this was going to swing the election. That was the biggest takeaway for me. That seemed like a disappointment. But again, state rights, protecting Bitcoin, protecting your right to self-custody, I think is very big.
I think what's more important, I don't think it's going to sway anything, but I think it's a reflection of the sentiment of the people, right? Like the fact that it was bipartisan support shows that, you know, across the aisle, like these the people that are like more direct, you know, the smaller you get in terms of representation, the more representative it is of the people. So what this says is like in the people of Pennsylvania are telling their representatives there that, you know, they care about this, and they care enough that it got massive bipartisan support. That is more of a signal than what we'll see from like a U.S. House member or a U.S. Senate member. Like the higher you go up, the more like each of these people are representing, the less reflective, or at least the slower it'll be to reflect the will of the people. So I think what this shows is that the will of the people, at least in Pennsylvania, is largely pro Bitcoin and pro self-custody. So I think that's, that would be my takeaway from it, that like how that reflects on the presidential election, you know, it'd be like favorable, obviously, for, Trump, who is the one touting Bitcoin and a Bitcoin reserve and stuff like that. But I don't think for a lot of people, I mean, for Bitcoiners, it's probably higher up, but for the people that are just, you know, want to have the ability to do it, a lot of them may not be, they probably have other things higher up on their what's important for my vote list. So I don't know how it'll impact that. But what we could see is maybe down the road, even the Democrats kind of start changing their tune. And I think that Warren kind of already started to, right? Because it's so unpopular, her anti-Bitcoin stuff. So
I do think she came out. Yeah, I think Warren came out during the debate with John Deaton, I believe, and said that she's not against crypto. She just wants it to be more regulated or play by the same rules as the other financing sectors. So there is a change. I still don't really care for Warren. I hope John Deaton wins that race. I'd like to kind of spin off of this. And do you think that this gives traction to Senator Lummis's strategic Bitcoin reserve? Do you think this helps get this kind of brought up and get a vote on in the House? Or do you think that it's still got an extreme uphill battle? And again, I'm not sure when that bill will get a vote. I would imagine probably sometime in January, February, after all the election is done. But if anyone wants to talk about that, I'd like to get your take to see if this, your thoughts on the strategic Bitcoin reserve is going to gain traction in the houses.
I haven't read the bill, so I don't know how it's worded and how it's structured. I mean, it could just come down to the wording, whether people want to vote for it or talk about it, and you know, the things that they, you know, if it in any way is worded that like undermines the Federal Reserve, they'll probably not vote for it or vote on it even maybe. Cause you know, they all know who pays their bills, and by bills, I mean, you know, not like the paltry sums that we give them for their salary. I'm talking about the real bill payers. I don't know. It depends on how it's worded.
So I have it pulled up here. I just did a quick search. So her bill, she wants the United States to acquire or hold about 5% of Bitcoin's total supply, roughly 1 million Bitcoin. They want to do this over a course of 5 years, this is saying. The proposal aims to leverage Bitcoin as a hedge against inflation and the national debt, positioning Bitcoin alongside traditional reserves like gold. The funding for this purchase will come from relocating resources within the Treasury and the Federal Reserve without increasing the national budget. The bill emphasizes preserving citizens' right to self-custody Bitcoin and affirms that private ownership will not be infringed upon by the government. So that's what her bill entails. And it's the Bitcoin Act of 2024.
I like it. I think it'll be... Like I said, I think that what we saw in Pennsylvania is indicative of like the support that it's getting from the people there. It'd be interesting if there's more states that vote on similar things. I think that could add traction to it. I just don't know right now how much of like the signal from the people is reaching up to the House and Senate. So, you know, that'll be something to look at. But also, like if it gets big enough, like people they'll just do it for an easy win, right? Like. If it's not really costing them anything politically, there's nobody that's like really super against it, I think, other than, well, maybe the banks. But if you're desperate for votes, you know, it's kind of an easy way to get some.
I'm not sure if the banks are entirely against it either now, is I think a lot of them are trying to get in on the action. I can't remember the proposal that got approved through Congress, but Biden vetoed it, but that would have allowed the bank to custody and hold Bitcoin.
That's the thing, right? The banks want to get there before everybody else does. So that's why I would say they're probably against it for now.
Okay, I see where you're going with that. Anybody else want to hit on the strategic Bitcoin reserve or the Pennsylvania Bitcoin rights?
I think they're going to sell a reserve in the lame duck period. That's just my opinion.
I'm sorry, I missed that, Texas. You say they're going to sell?
I think they'll, especially if Trump wins. This is my opinion that they'll probably sell what we got in the lame duck period, but we'll see.
Yeah, that could be just kind of one last kind of like F you. Just because they know that he made it pretty clear that he wanted to do this. But maybe that's just for votes. So I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just chime in. I think that would be, you know, just again, like one giant strike against national security in the United States. You know, it pains so many people when we sell oil reserves, we have other reserves that they manage. I just don't understand how these folks up there in those seats have determined themselves to be, you know, commodities traders, but they have. We absolutely must have someone in office who appreciates Bitcoin and the underlying asset, you know, which Bob Burnett talks about a lot, which is the block space, right? We have to have onshore energy production in order to have a thriving economy in the United States. And we must have onshore Bitcoin mining. It will be the underpinning of every, certainly it will be a part of every energy company's portfolio, but it will be the underpinning of, you know, the entire financial system, you know, fast forward, I don't know how long it takes. So it just seems as though, you know, this would, if they do, in fact, if those in office today do, in fact, make a move against Bitcoin, this will go down as one of the the greatest strategic blunders of the United States, because our I won't say enemies, but the folks who we don't align with, you know, don't see it that way, right? Like, I keep harping on LinkedIn about BRICS, and it just burns me up that Russia is mining so much Bitcoin and laying infrastructure investments in Bitcoin mining and AI. And, you know, we're still talking about clean energy, recycling, you know, kids that can't put a fitted sheet on their bed are lecturing me on how much power to use, and they don't even understand what's really at stake.
Yeah, absolutely, Lisa. You make a lot of good points there. Before I say anything, Shane, you have your hand up, sir.
Yeah, you know, not sure, you know, when anything like this will get passed, but I think there's something that's very interesting that's happened, and it's kind of snuck in, and I don't think it's really caught a lot of Bitcoiners' attention. There was news yesterday, Dennis Porter broke it out, that Bitcoin and digital asset companies have become the single largest corporate PAC donors in the entire nation right now. And that accounts for over 50% of the donations for every industry in 2024. So to kind of give you an idea, the corporate contributions in 2022 were $175 million. This year, they're $154.9 million. And the crypto corporations, I should say the crypto contributions, that was. And then the corporations this year inside of crypto is $119 million compared to $4.5 million. And if anybody understands, you know, what this means in politics, it means if you're not going to be on the side of Bitcoin going forward, you're probably not going to be in office. That is a huge political shift in donations itself. So whether it's now or in the future, we are trending that way. And that is a great sign for everybody here in the United States and Bitcoin.
I just want to make sure I understood those numbers. It was 115 million of the 150 million. Was contributed by
so in crypto corporations, that's 119.2 million in just crypto contributions, like from regular people, so not corporations. It's 154.9 million. That's just 2024, as compared to 175 million and 4.6 million in 2022. So we are seeing kind of a you know, a hockey stick in terms of contributions coming from this space into the political action, and it's now accounting for more than 50% of all the donations in 2024.
Okay, I'm tracking now. Yeah, that's a lot of money coming through. So it's looking positive for us. Again, it's a slow grind, but I don't think it's necessarily going to get easier from here. But it's good news, and hopefully they start taking us seriously. And so, Lisa, to kind of piggyback on what you're saying, where you believe energy companies are going to be forced or just unable to not do it. So I guess it's still forced to incorporate Bitcoin mining in their infrastructure, correct?
Yeah, no, they're not going to be forced at all, right? It's just, it's operationally solving problems for energy companies. It's also just economic for them. I mean, really, that's the driving factor. That's what I'm working on now, is sitting down with, mostly at the private equity level, but sitting down with midstream asset operators and then their private equity backers. And when you sit down and, you know, say to somebody, hey, take a look at your gas processing plant. You know, you're capable of, you know, you have power. You have 200 megawatts here available. You're only using 60 megawatts or 100 megawatts. You know, if you do a partnership with a Bitcoin miner, let's say you do a partnership for 20 or 30 megawatts, and you basically can monetize just on those 20 or 30 megawatts, let's say it's $4 million a year that drops to the bottom line, right? They can either do the mining themselves and have capital expenditure, or, you know, we can, in the Bitcoin mining space, can come in and partner with them and bear those capital costs. And, you know, that midstream asset can contribute the power, right? $4 million, this is where it really kind of hit home for me. My partner in this work is Dan Morrison. And, you know, Dan was looking at these assets and the valuation of these assets. And because so many of these are held within, you know, have private equity backers, they trade at whatever it is, an 8 multiple. So $4 million times 8, $32 million for an asset that isn't held, you know, indefinitely, right? If they're looking to sell these assets in 5 years, that's a fairly big number. And so looking inside of all of the asset holders in the energy space, whether or not you're a, just all kinds, Coleman. I mean, gas processing plants, compressor stations, water stations. There is energy infrastructure all over, that is not being monetized. And yet you have energy companies that have had huge capital coordination and huge, they've built all of this steel, laid all this concrete, built all this steel, and they're not optimizing. So now that they have Bitcoin mining, it's a way for them to not only, you know, really operationally get as much horsepower out of their asset, but it's dollars that just fall right to the bottom line. So, you know, I mean, we see that as the message spreads, you know, we say to them, you don't have to like Bitcoin. You can keep the malware that Elizabeth Warren had the mainstream media program in your mind. You know, that can stay in place. You can think it's for terrorists, but actually it's accretive. It's operationally beneficial for you. This is why you should look at Bitcoin mining. Like, of course they're looking at Bitcoin mining now. They all will be doing this to some extent. I mean, I would go so far to say that you will be mining Bitcoin in, you know, offshore in the Gulf of Mexico, right? I think that there are plenty of those old broken down drill ships. You will pull a drill ship next to a rig. You will run cables to move the gas from the rig offshore, right? Why would you? Let's just say that I'll make this quick, but let's just say that you're offshore in the Gulf of Mexico and you're going back in and you're selling into the Henry Hub market, which is, you know, where you get the NYMEX price, or you're selling into the Houston Ship Channel. I mean, you're going to get roughly $2 for your gas, if that, right? You have transportation costs. You have obviously all sorts of costs associated. But if Bitcoin price and hash price is favorable, right? It could be, those companies could be realizing multiples for their assets. So it's not $2 gas anymore. It could be $4, $6, $8 gas, right? People are just now beginning to realize those economics exist. And so the ability to economically dispatch energy molecules towards Bitcoin mining or towards the traditional market, I mean, there's so much option value in there that people don't know how to value it yet.
That is extremely interesting. I've never thought about that, utilizing it offshore with the abandoned wells. That's it opens up a lot of possibilities. Bob, I just showed that your hand showed again. Did you have something you wanted to say on this, or is it just stuck up? I'm going to take that as a no. It's really interesting, Lisa. And I think that I'd like to get your take on this. And we mentioned it earlier in the show, but Amazon is moving forward. So Microsoft's doing, I think it was Three Mile Island, correct, for nuclear power. But Amazon is investing more than $500 million in small modular nuclear reactors to power their AWS. And so do you believe that, not in the near term, but in the long term, like 5 to 8 years out, that they'll be utilizing Bitcoin mining to stabilize and use up their excess energy from these reactors?
You know, that is not my area of expertise, but I'd have to say yes. Next Tuesday night, I'm attending an event. Hopefully they'll discuss this subject, but it's hosted by our friends, the Digital Wildcatters here in Houston. I think that's like on Eventbrite. So or hit me up in my DMs if you're in Houston and you want to go talk about nuclear power. And like I said, it's hosted by Bitcoin veterans. It's hosted by Digital Wildcatters in Houston, and they're Bitcoiners. So hopefully the topic will come up. But, you know, I'm close to a power generation company that's based in Texas. And, you know, we've long had these conversations about that, and the executive team is they're not in they don't have nuclear assets, but they're very versed in the topic, and they've long said, you know, the technology exists, we know how to do it, we know how to do it effectively, but the issue always has fallen down in Washington, right? It's always who has the biggest lobbyist. So when you begin to realize that Microsoft and Amazon and these huge power players, right, with, I mean, you know, the amount of time these guys spend in Washington, like, I think the tide has shifted. And so, yes, I'm certainly not an expert, but I've heard folks say that Bitcoin mining will be, you know, very useful on those sites to act as a sponge and a, you know, as a load balancer.
Eomar, is this in your wheelhouse, sir?
Sorry, I missed the first part there. I had a phone call. But in terms of like the excess energy capacity being shifted to Bitcoin, is that what we're on right now?
Yeah, with the nuclear reactors with Amazon and Microsoft.
I mean, it's not directly in my wheelhouse, but I like the summary, and sorry if this is a little bit repetitive, but you know, the demand for AI and for like these data warehouses fluctuates based on demand, you know. So like during like regular business hours, it could spike up, but you know, in the early morning hours and stuff, it could decline. And you know, you can kind of see this if you work on like the East Coast and your company is on the West Coast, you'll see like some lag and stuff when you're working with different systems, potentially, like when the West Coast is still sleeping and you're doing work versus when they're all up. So the idea that I think will happen is they'll buy, or they'll have this excess capacity for like peak demand, but peak demand, for energy, I don't think is going to be, it's probably going to be a few hours during the day, and then like slow, like there's going to be you know, probably as that demand for like the data resources declines, that energy will just be wasted otherwise, you know. Whereas if they have like Bitcoin miners in place, or, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to have it, but they could contract out with like companies to use that excess energy, right? That'll probably be like the first step, maybe, because there'll be less risk that they're taking on. But you know, they can contract out with these companies, and then those companies will turn on the power when you know, Microsoft or Amazon or whoever it is doesn't need it anymore, and then they'll be able to, you know, probably get the, it'll be a win-win in the sense that it's going to nothing for Microsoft and Amazon. They could sell it for a couple cents, and then these miners, they can buy it at a discount to what like the normal energy price is in the area, because it's just wasted energy, you know, stranded energy is like, you know, like to think of it. So that's where I see it. I see it going that route. And then, you know, if over time, if it's proven, or if their company has enough risk appetite, they could just jump in on them, like on their own, you know, doing it. But my take is that it'll probably first go to like contracts and stuff with third parties to do it.
All right, perfect. Thank you for your insight on that. Does anybody else want to comment on the nuclear sites with Amazon or Microsoft? Twice, thrice. Okay, so the last thing I'd like to finish on today is the New York Times post that was released yesterday afternoon. And I know there's probably just a lot of hopium in this title, but I definitely want to spend some time on it because I'm a big fan of this. It was posted by the New York Times that Trump is considering ending the federal income taxes and replacing them with tariffs. I think it would be amazing. Ron Paul came out and said he would go down as one of the greatest presidents next to George Washington if this came through. I don't know how much of this has legs to go on, but let's get everybody's thoughts on this. And while we're getting our thoughts, I'm just going to read off some quick statistics. So what I would think is that it's just the income tax that would be removed. I still believe that they would have Social Security tax and Medicare tax that would still be applied. So for those of you that aren't aware what you're paying every time you get paid, Social Security collects 6.2% only for your first $160,000 made. After that, it's not collected anymore. And Medicare tax is 1.45% for your first $200,000. And then after that, increases by almost another percent. And so I still believe we'd have to have that to fund those programs, but your income tax would be completely removed. So let's get everybody's thoughts on this.
I mean, if anybody follows me on here, you'll know I am not a Trump fan, but if he actually came out for that, despite all of his other flaws, I might even be able to bring myself to vote for him, because even if not directly, indirectly, that'll end a lot of the problems we have with our government today. I think it'll limit the scope of the government, and you know, just a lot of the things that we all have problems with will just naturally fade away because there won't be the funds for it. You know, I would have to see. Like, I really wish he would release more on, like, who's going to be in his cabinet and stuff. You know, like, I really liked Vivek's, I think we talked about before, but I really liked Vivek's messaging on how he would cut the federal government. And, you know, if you were to do those kind of cuts and rein in our, you know, Vivek, the big difference between Vivek and J.D. Vance is Vivek was 100% in on, you know, ending our foreign entanglements, where J.D. Vance still has some exceptions. And, you know, if we get rid of those exceptions, if we take the Vivek stance on it, then we can survive as a nation with much, much less government expenditures. And then we could switch off of this, like, life-sucking, economy-draining income tax. And, you know, that's, if you want to talk about ways to restore a free America, abolishing the income tax is probably the number one way to do it, because then it's the, you know, the Federal Reserve is like the root of the evil, right? But there's a reason they were passed together, you know, in the same year, the Federal Reserve and the income tax. It's how the government steals from us directly, in addition to the indirect inflation that they do. So I'd be a huge supporter of this. I would love it if he just doubled down and went all in on it. Because once it starts being talked about, like, there's nobody that's going to be against it. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I shouldn't say nobody. There's the socialists out there, though. But, you know, we can't help everybody. But most people that are working and looking at their paychecks would be 100% behind abolishing the income tax.
My hope is that this was released or leaked, or however you want to put it, is for those who aren't aware, Trump is going on Joe Rogan this afternoon. And so I would hope, and I am hoping, that Joe Rogan would bring this up, because this would be a huge talking point. It doesn't matter. Like, again, this is not a partisan, it's bipartisan. If you could remove this, and then maybe he could explain what that would entail. I think that would be huge. So if anybody else, Shane, I'm not sure. Again, I keep seeing your hand show up. If you have something you want to add.
Yeah, just to Eomar's point, right, is like if I think most people that are contributing to society, right, the producers are going to be all for getting rid of the income tax. And anybody who's not can still write a check to the federal government. Go ahead and sign as much as you like. I don't think they will, because every year when people who bitch about not paying enough in federal taxes go, I wish they would tax me more. Well, there's nothing literally stopping these people from stroking a bigger check to them. Instead, they go and they try to find as many deductions as possible. And obviously, we all see them for the hypocrites that they are. So yeah, no, to Eomar's point, I think he summed that up pretty good. If Trump's going this way, I don't know, maybe he just wants to win the election. He's speaking my language either way.
Yeah, and again, this to me, if this is true, and he can elaborate on it, this is huge news. I don't think you would get away from the state taxes, though. I'm sure the states would still be able to incorporate their own income tax. But again, that just allows for, you know, if you don't want to pay any income tax whatsoever at the federal state level, you just move to states that don't have it. I really don't see the downside to implementing this. It would eliminate a lot of government sectors. It would get rid of all this bloat, and it would just make things more efficient, and it would rein in spending. You'd have to be more fiscally sound. But even with that, I don't think you would lose out on a lot of money. Maybe initially in the first, you know, two quarters, just from an accounting perspective. But if you allow everyone to hold on to 30% more of their paycheck, there's going to be very few of us who just go and put that directly into Bitcoin. The vast majority of people are going to spend that in the economy. They're going to go to eat, movies, vacations. So it's just going to increase the economy. It eliminates or it helps reduce the debt burden because, again, you have higher GDP. So for me, and please, if anyone has a downside to it, let's hear it. But I can't think of anything that's negative from this.
We might have to have a federal government actually constrained by the Constitution. So that might be a downside for some statists out there.
But you know what? That could be a negative for Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin's whole thesis is government spending is out of control. So it could limit the accelerated growth of Bitcoin if government's not as reckless with its money. Again, that could be a downside. Again, just kind of spitballing here. But Bitcoin, Carney, I think I cut you off. So sorry, go ahead.
No, it's all good. I don't know if any of you guys actually clicked into the article, but I think the headline, it kind of shows how far out of touch the New York Times is with logic or society or reality. It's meant to like scare people. Like, look how crazy this guy is. He wants to eliminate the income tax. How could we ever survive? And then if you read into it, it was like a throwaway line he had at a barbershop. When the guys were complaining about taxes, he's like, yeah, we could live without it. We were funded on tariffs before. And that was it. Like, he has no plan. There was nothing else said about it. But then they go on to say, like, both liberal and conservatives agree that this is mathematically impossible and would be disastrous for the economy and on. Like, the world's going to end if he tries to do this. So I think it was made just to be more of, like, fear porn or clickbait for their crazy ideologue following.
That's my fault. I definitely didn't read the article. I just went by the headline. But I think the majority of people did that I saw on Twitter reposting that. So let's hope that Joe Rogan read that and he asked him about it. I think that'd be a really good benefit from this fear porn title from the New York Times.
I mean, yeah. Their whole premise is like absurd because they say replacing it, the last paragraph I'm going to announce is replacing income taxes with tariffs would reverse the progressivity of the tax system in the United States. But I mean, that's like fundamentally not true because like people with more income are spending more, so they'll still be paying more taxes, right? Because they're buying more things. It's just fair, right? It's just more, a sales tax or what do they call it? Like a consumption tax is by definition more fair than an income tax. I mean, like the arguments they have with like, oh, well, the ultra wealthy. Well, the ultra wealthy are like their money is generally a lot of it is shielded from income tax because of the fact that it's in assets and stuff that are growing. So that if they don't sell them, then they're not getting taxed on it. So it's kind of a moot point, right? But they are still buying stuff. So if you know, Jeff Bezos bought a couple years ago that gigantic freaking yacht. So if there was, tariffs on that, then, we would be able to, he would still be paying progressively more because he's buying more because he's got more wealth, so I don't really see that issue. Tariffs aren't going to be on like food stuff. So I don't think so. I don't really see the downside. Like, yeah, if you want to buy a Japanese car versus an American car, you might hit some tariffs or something. Like, okay. If tariffs are on top of an income tax, I'm against them. But if you're telling me you're going to use tariffs instead of an income tax, then by all means, it's a much better system.
What about doing tariffs and then having a federal sales tax? So let's say that a federal sales tax is 8%. Would you be in favor of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a consumption tax, right? Like, if I can be self-sufficient, then I'm not paying taxes, right? If I have my own my own plot of land and I'm, able to get most of what I need there, then I'm not being forced to pay a tax. Right. But like, by contrast, if you're like, say you're a farmer somewhere and you're selling some of your cattle or some of your produce or whatever the case may be, you're paying taxes on that. So it's essentially theft. Like if the government was taking 100% of our assets, we'd say like we're all slaves, right? But if they're taking 50%, like we're free. I don't know. It just seems absurd that we ever let it get to the point it's at right now. So
I think the counter argument to the federal sales tax is that like if you're poor and all of your income goes to like food and clothes and shelter and you get taxed on that, and those items are only a fraction of like a rich person's income, then poor people are actually paying like a higher percentage of their income to tax. So you could put like a limit or like a threshold, like it only applies to people who make over 200K or whatever.
That's harder to enforce. I think the easier way to enforce is just no taxes on foods, like food stuff.
Yeah, I like that.
And like after reading Fiat Food, I would say like even like whole food things shouldn't have tax. And then like, you know, once you get into processed foods, you can have taxes on that. You know, so this way it encourages people to buy, you know, chicken, steak, actual vegetables, and it pushes them away from like the processed things, and that will save us money in the tail end of things. You know, if we don't have kids eating, you know, like 200 grams of sugar a day, you know,
yeah, I heard
their life, it'll help out a lot.
I think it was that Cali Means dude, he was saying, I don't know the real number, I want to say he said like 50% of food stamps went to sugary drinks, some insane number that big.
I think it's higher than that.
If they just got rid of that, like, hey, you can only buy water with this or whatever, like, so nuts. But while I, like, before the show's over, I think I must have misunderstood Shane earlier when he said, like, 100 and something million seemed so low to me to be 50% of all political contributions. Because I feel like Gates just came out the other day and he's putting 50 on Kamala. So I don't know. Did anyone understand what he was saying better than me?
I did not, so I couldn't elaborate further on that. But I think he said, yeah, it was more than 50% for $170 million. So again, I could be wrong on how I was taking that.
Yeah, I always thought like we wouldn't have a big enough lobby to change anything at that level. But if it's really that, like 50%, one more cycle and we'll have like complete control of the Congress. But yeah, I think
maybe it was a B with a billion. I don't know. I know like AIPAC alone was like $42 million this year. So I don't know. I missed the context for that. Or I forgot it. So maybe it's like in a particular sector, maybe in the finance sector, it was $150 million. It's possible. I don't know offhand though.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Shane next week or send him a direct message for clarification. But I'm going to go ahead and wrap the show up here. We're a little bit past the hour. I do want to thank everybody who tuned in today, all the speakers we had up here, Yomar, Lisa, Bob Van Kirk, Bitcoin Carney, Shane, of course. I'm really happy for all of you listening in the audience, Randy K, Wade, Allison. There's more than 100 of us out here, so I can't name you all, but it really means a lot to me that you all are tuning in consistently. And so if it's your first time, we do this every weekday, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. And so Monday morning, we'll be doing this again. Tuesday evening at 7 p.m., we will be doing the Bitcoin video podcast. We're going to give an update with Operation Gabriel. So make sure you tune into that. We'll have it live streamed on YouTube or we'll have it live streamed here on Twitter. Just follow our X handle. I want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Punchplate. Check them out at punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics. Check them out at paladintowertactics.com. Sola Satoshi at solasatoshi.com. And Black Sheep Ammo at blacksheepammo.com. I want to thank our partners for having extremely easy-to-read websites. So it makes my job a lot easier. But that's it. This is a wrap. Go out there. Have a fantastic weekend. Talk Bitcoin. Talk to your friends. Talk to your neighbors. Shake some hands. Plant those seeds. I think we're going to have some fun price action over the weekend. Bitcoin sitting right around 68.5. So let's see if we break 70 come Monday. Get out there and have fun, but don't shitcoin. It's like buying a lottery ticket with yesterday's numbers.